providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And in the second half of this show, we are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex. And I'm glad we waited to record this segment until Friday, because there's a lot more for us to talk about now on Friday. Mark, I first want to start off with a recap of the inflation data. On Thursday, we had the CPI data that came in that was slightly higher than estimates. And then on Friday, the PPI data that came in that was slightly lower than estimates and showed again another decline month over month in PPI. I believe that's 3 months in a row. So, Mark, as we have these two inflation data points, and again, one came in higher than estimates, one came in lower than estimates, what's your takeaway from kind of the net impact or the net look at inflation in the U.S.?
Yeah, so first I'd say that the CPI is by far more important than the PPI, and partly because, of course, Federal Reserve targets consumer inflation, even though it does it through the personal consumption expenditure deflator. PPI is really about commodity prices. And it's interesting that you point out commodity prices are soft, falling for the third time month over month. But it's really the CPI that I think is the key. And the amazing thing to me is that despite, as you mentioned, the slightly firmer than expected CPI, the markets did not care. And by not caring, I mean that two things. One is that U.S. yields fell further. I have the two-year note yield down about 20 basis points this week. And I'd say that after that CPI, and we've had some Fed officials like Cleveland Fed President Mester, who actually votes this year, even though she's going to retire in the middle of the year. She pushed against the view of a March rate cut. But the market still has the bit in its teeth and is running with it. I think we finish up this week with about an 80% chance of a 25 basis point rate cut in March. And my own guess is that it's still too early to be that confident. We're gonna get more data before the March meeting. But at the end of the day, I think that the markets need something much more solid for it to really rethink about the March cut. And we could see that data next week. We go back to the real sector data from the inflation. But before we just leave the inflation, maybe we should mention about what people now call a super core. This is mentioned by Powell and other Fed officials. This is the core rate, which in the U.S. we exclude food and energy, and it excludes housing. That rose by 0.4%. You're not going to see it on the tables on the news wires. They don't track it like this. But the super core ex housing, up 0.4%. And that turns into a 3.9% year-over-year gain, essentially same as in November. And because Fed officials like Powell have cited it, and it's still so elevated, running roughly twice what their target is for the overall inflation, I think that it's a concern, and I think this is why I don't think the Fed's going to cut rates in March.
Well, Mark, just to that point, when you think about how the year started, it was all about the jobs number the first week. This last week was about CPI and PPI, the inflation. Next week, we got some numbers coming in for retail and for the housing, so we see how these numbers start to affect the consumer, and then we should start getting in the next couple of weeks some of the Q4 earnings report numbers coming in. So it's going to be interesting to see what economic data matters for this year. What do you think that the markets are going to key in on more? Because last year was all about jobs and inflation. Is that still the story for 2024? Or are some of these other metrics like manufacturing or retail or housing going to play more of a part, or consumer confidence going to play a part?
Yeah, I think if I had to say one thing that's going to be the touchstone, I kind of think it's going to be the elections. And I think we might have talked about this before, but typically, and by typically, I mean 15 out of the last 17 presidential election years, the stock market has rallied. And those two exceptions were exceptions, but they were crisis years, like 2008. So I think that the markets feel, I mean, just looking at what the market's done, And most people I talk to, they seem fairly confident about rising stock market. I'm less convinced, even though the S&P's 500 just made a new high today, a little bit above 4,800. I'm concerned that this is going to prove to be like a double top pattern in the S&P's, and we have to wash out some of these late longs, bring us back down to about 4,600 or so. That's about 200 points from what we've seen today.
Mark, so as we, I guess, move forward with this year, right? And as you said, it is an election year. So I know some people are considering that as well. But so far, it seems like there's a lot of liquidity in the system. Look at the VIX. The VIX is still relatively low. And markets, even though they have shown some weakness to kick off the year, they're still hanging around right at near all-time highs. How much do we need to focus on liquidity in the market, and how much liquidity do you think is even on the sidelines?
Yeah, we know that a lot of people, right? That we've seen like record flows into the U.S. money markets, and I mentioned this off mic that I had spoke at a risk managers association meeting earlier this week, and one of the big talking points was how resilient the markets have been in the face of these escalating hot spots like in the Middle East, and also think about what's going on in Ukraine. I mean, the U.S. and Europe struggling to give Ukraine more aid and weapons, and Ukraine having difficulty recruiting more soldiers. And so Russia seems to be playing this game of attrition, and they've stepped up their attacks. And there's other little conflicts. I mean, yeah, I think that the Rand Corporation might have had an assessment of over 100 like modest conflicts taking place around the world right now. So it seems to me like the world's very dangerous, in a dangerous position. I'm struck by the on a Wednesday, the Financial Times had three articles that caught my eye, I should say. One is their claim that this, what we're going through now, is the most elevated global stress, geopolitical stress since the end of World War II. And then they also noted that last year was the warmest record, warmest year on record. And then there was a third article that caught my eye, all on the same day, of course. And this was that the crypto and like fintech was fined by the U.S. more last year for the first time than the mainstream financial system for like lax compliance. And so I think we live in a dangerous world, but you won't notice that by looking at the capital markets, where the Nasdaq is up 3% this week. The Japanese stock market, the Nikkei, is at 30-year plus highs, up almost 7% year to date. So yeah, I think that it's hard to measure this kind of liquidity, but I do see a lot of money still on the sidelines. I'm just thinking about money markets. And short term, those who didn't buy money markets, a lot of people bought bills directly from the Treasury. So I'm concerned that this is really a liquidity driven market rather than a fundamentally driven market.
Mark, I think that's an interesting point. And really, all things considered, it's crazy that the markets are up as much as they are, not just US markets, but many global markets. It's also crazy that oil is not up more. So it's crazy the markets are up, but that oil isn't, in the face of all this geopolitical tension, as well as just some of the different machinations from OPEC and the supply cuts and the supposed coming cuts. But one thing that's usually a gauge of volatility is the US dollar. And over the last week, it's barely moved. It's hanging out around 102.15 here on Friday. What do you make of the fact that markets are healthy, the oil markets aren't, and the dollar is flat?
Yeah, the dollar is flat. We spent this whole week within the range that we set last Friday on the dollar index. I sort of think about this as a parallel would be, that old myth, King Midas, Greek mythology. Remember, he was being punished by the gods, and everything he touched turned to gold. I mean, who wouldn't want that? Doesn't it sound great? Until he tried to eat some food, drink some wine, and hug his daughter. And I think that that's our curse, really, is that there's a lot of important things that take place that just aren't reflected in the markets. And I think that partly it's how the markets really work. What is relevant to the markets right now is central bank policy, market positioning. And we saw, the dollar index fell from, say, on early November from 107 and fell to below 101. Call it a 6% move in the last 2 months of last year. And so I had anticipated a bounce, and we got that bounce, but we've really gone sideways this week. We really made the high last Friday, a little bit above 103. I'm thinking that the dollar's, this correction after falling in November and December is not over. To me, I'm looking for another leg up in the dollar. And that I think could take us up to 103.5 to 104 area on a dollar index. If I'm wrong, which is always a possibility, of course, I think that it means that we have to go back down and test that 101 area.
So, Mark, again, talking about geopolitics, there are two wars ongoing, which the markets seem to largely ignore right now. However, on Friday, we did get some action in, you could say, gold, in some of the other areas, again, on the back of that inflation data, too, that reacted at least a little bit to the wars, again, that are continuing here. Are markets now just so big, almost a beast on their own, that geopolitics, and we can include the election, they don't seem to have such a big impact, at least right now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that with gold, I mean, I'm not sure. I sort of would say that gold is sort of like caught in between the geopolitics, especially in the Middle East, which should be good for gold, you'd imagine, and the drop in U.S. rates. As I mentioned, the 2-year note yield is off about in the U.S. off about 20 basis points this week, and holding everything else, constant. If you would tell me U.S. yields off 20 basis points, I'd be more bullish gold too. What strikes me, though, about what you say about the geopolitics is this weekend on the 13th, Taiwan has an election. It's seen to be a very important election, partly because, of course, this is a Taiwanese issue is key. China continues to at least aerial harass Taiwan. There's been a stepped up cyber attacks. And yet the Taiwanese stock market is flat this week. No real impact on Taiwanese stocks. And if anything, they've held up better than Korean stocks, which are off like 2%, and Chinese mainland stocks off about 1.33%. So I think, it's a sort of a bit of a enigma, a riddle about why the how well the markets have been holding up despite what seems to be a deterioration in geopolitics. I think that it's telling us that people who are voting with their pocketbook are not focused so much on geopolitics, that they don't see it really affecting the kind of drivers like interest rates or inflation, even though there could be some more sustained disruptions to supply chains.
Mark, just a quick follow-up on some of the Asian markets. While the Chinese markets had a rough go of it, in general, the Japanese markets, the Korean markets, the Philippine markets have all done pretty good. What do you make of the strength in the Asian markets? Is that something where Westerners are looking at some of these kind of there's a lot of Asian emerging market funds you can buy, but are they looking at these economies and maybe ETFs and businesses within those economies as potentially having more upside than some of the economies in the West, or how do you read that?
Yeah, Chad, I kind of think that the Asian markets are really off to leaving aside China and some of the small ones. But I'm looking at some pretty serious losses from not only what I call the Greater China, Hang Seng in Hong Kong, Chinese markets, the mainland stocks that trade in Hong Kong down 5%, but Taiwan off 2.3% year to date. So most of that took place in the first week of the year. Korea down 4.9%. I think this is a this is I think it's really like people liquidating after last year's rally, looking for better levels to get back involved with. Taiwan and Korean exports have until very recently been weak, and of course they're dragged down by the weakness in China, who, by the way, earlier today came out with a decent trade number showing an increase in both exports and imports. But so I too am thinking about like how are we going to manage the portfolios this year? And I think that the dollar is still well overvalued. So even though I'm looking for a near term dollar recovery, I think that these foreign currencies like Japan, the Eurozone, very cheap relative to the dollar on a fundamental basis. The problem, though, I think, is that we still are growing. It looks to me like the U.S. economy probably is growing around 2% in Q4, and this is still well above most of the like, say, the U.S. rivals or other like large economies. And so I think this is what's I think people are preferring the U.S. stock market, I think, and Japan to everybody else.
So one big theme that we were talking about over the last almost 2 years now was that investors did have an alternative outside of the markets because of money market funds, higher yielding, safer instruments that money did rotate into as markets were correcting. But now that markets bounced back so strong last year, still holding around all-time highs, and it does seem like the buy the dip mentality is back. Mark, do you think there is an alternative for investors outside of the markets?
I think cash. I mean, you think about taking no risk. Give your money to the U.S. government for 6 months, 5.2% without taking much risk. You want to lock it in for a year, 4.6%. If we knew that we could lock in 5% until the middle of the year, that seems attractive to a lot of people still. So I think that a lot of money on the sidelines. I think stock market valuation, people are concerned. Typically, the stocks rally ahead of the earnings season, which you note is beginning, kicking off with the financial institutions this week and industrials beginning next week. So I think that's what I've done too for the first time, I think, in years. Putting more money into fixed income, just trying to lock some of these high yields in place for a bit, while I'm concerned that if the reason the Federal Reserve is going to be cutting interest rates and the Eurozone cutting interest rates is because the economies are weakening, I'm not sure that stocks are necessarily the best place to be in right away. So I'm trying to like bide my time, but I do think that the yields of basically cash is still paying.
Well, Mark, speaking of yields, a lot has been made recently, and I've seen probably four or five articles in the last 2 days about the yield curve potentially flattening in 2024 and what that may mean as far as economic contractions. Right now, it's still inverted. It's been inverted for a while. It's been inverted for more than a year, where the short term has got higher rates and yields than the longer term bonds. But if that does invert, do you think it necessarily means we're going to have that recession that everybody has now assumed is off the books and we've had the soft landing? Or do you think that it is important as the yield curve does flatten in 2024? If that happens, is that a signal investors should be cautious of?
Yeah, Chad, I think that's a really good point you raise. I think many people think that an inverted yield curve is what tips us into recession. But when I look at the charts of it, it seems to be more likely, more common for what happens is when the curve is inverted, yes, the economy is slowing, but when it steepens, that is when you get the economic crunch. And right now, the yield curve, about minus 20 basis points, that's looking at the 2 to the 10, so the coupon part of the curve, the meat of it. We were at about 15 basis points last October. And so I think we need to see something like that. But I'm concerned that I know a lot of people have come around to the soft landing. That's what scares me. A lot of people were in the recession camp, and now they just like shifted sides. And I just think that what happens is sort of like in a parade, when you're out of step with the rest of the parade and you try to catch up. Sometimes you're still out of step, even when you try to catch up. And I think that's what the market is doing. And so for me, I think that the risks of a recession increase late this year, early next year. But right now, the economy does seem to have a sufficient momentum where it's growing above what the Federal Reserve says is what they call trend growth, which is really the non-inflationary pace, which is about 1.8%.
Yeah, these recession calls do just keep on getting pushed back, but we will get a recession. The question is just when. So, Mark, in terms of next week, then, what data do we have to watch out for? Is there anything in the next couple weeks that could move markets or could actually set up another trend?
Yeah, so next week, I think that our attention turns back to the real sector for the U.S. We have to, as we look towards the second half of this month, of course, this is when all the central banks really meet. Well, not all of them, but the Federal Reserve, the ECB, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of Canada. I think that this is sort of we're sort of in an interregnum period. Sort of the central banks have signaled more or less that they're done raising interest rates. They have not signaled that when they're going to cut rates, but it's clear that they are going to cut rates. That'll be the next move from the major central banks. And so I don't think that. I think that the next 6 weeks, say second half of January through February now, is sort of this in-between period where markets could be choppy. And then when we get into March, I think that's when people are really making these bets about central bank rate cuts. And so that's when I think the volatility increases and this choppiness maybe gives way to a trend.
Okay, Mark, thank you for your insights. It's always great chatting with you to end the week, especially on a week like this week where inflation data and then some geopolitics perked up and got some markets moving. It is the end of the week, so now we need to wait until Monday to see if any of these moves will actually carry through, and who knows what news we're going to get geopolitics-wise over the weekend. Mark, thank you very much for your time. Everyone, if you want to keep up to date with Mark, check out his website, mark2market.com. And please go through our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report, to listen to all the daily editorials and company updates we recorded throughout the week. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.